You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my gun.
Took it in the guts, Barry.
Far away from my...
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Good morning, this is Annie for Showreel, 3CR's look at the Australian film industry. And today we're talking to filmmaker Roz Horan about her film Yiddish Land. It made a big splash. It's a film that actually investigates the 1,000-year-old language of Yiddish, which was superseded by Hebrew as the Israeli state was ensconced in the Palestinian region. This investigation of the language of Yiddish actually opened up quite a investigation into the culture of Jewish people across Europe and later into other places like Australia and Canada and the rest. Anyway, it's quite an interesting film. And I spoke to Roz, who's had a long history of making fascinating documentary films.
Yiddishland is a very interesting film, but could you give my listeners an understanding of the role that Yiddish plays in Jewish history and culture? Which is your investigation.
That's right. So it was, up to pre-war times, it was really the vernacular spoken language of Jewish people, particularly right across Eastern Europe, but, a large part of Europe. Hebrew was always just the religious language, the language of the Bible and the language of prayer. And so Yiddish crossed borders, it was spoken in Poland and Czechoslovakia and, Latvia and Ukraine and Russia, everywhere. That was the spoken language. And it picked up influences. It never belonged to a nation state because there was no Jewish nation state. And it picked up influences from all the various languages across Europe, but it's mainly... it's probably about 50 to 60% based on German with a lot of Slovakian languages, a little bit of Hebrew, some Armenian. Yeah, so it was the spoken language.
Well, that's the beauty of language, isn't it? It actually carries the history of the people within its nuances, and it's 1,000 years old.
It is. It sort of came, sort of started to be spoken about the same time as the Roman languages, Italian and French and so on. So it is 1,000, roughly 1,000 years old. And if we lost Yiddish completely, we would lose all of that history because language contains, it expresses the way people thought, the kind of essence of values of a culture, and certainly the arts, like the writing, so there's a rich treasure trove of literary writing in Yiddish. Like, for example, Isaac Bashevis Singer, won the Nobel Prize for his literature in Yiddish. So to lose the language entirely is to lose the culture, it's to lose the knowledge, it's to lose the history.
Well, you point out something very interesting in the film. There's lots of things interesting in this film, but one of them was that Yiddish is mother tongue, Hebrew is father tongue.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So it's called Mamaloshen, mother tongue. Yes, and so it didn't have the same status as Hebrew, father tongue, which, as I mentioned, Annie, was the language of spirituality. You know, so it was, they were on two different levels. And I guess in a way it wasn't respected as much within the Jewish, you know, from Jewish people. Like if you'd learned Hebrew, you know, that was a kind of greater knowledge. But of course, really only the men had access to Hebrew, you know, because only the men had that, were, you know, religious training. And so it was a completely really revolutionary thing when, I don't know if revolutionary is the right word, but, you know, a really big shift when Israel, when it was formed in 1948, decided to make their vernacular language Hebrew, a spoken Hebrew, and not Yiddish. You know, that was a very, very big move. And they did so for a number of reasons. One, because they felt, you know, Yiddish was associated with death and defeat and destruction, you know, of what had happened to them in the Holocaust. And they wanted a new language for a new start, you know, in a new nation state. And
yeah, what they did was actually turn their back on the nuances of experience and a broader cultural and culture of civilization.
They did. You know, the sort of the new Israelis, you know, they were called Sabras, and you know, and Hebrew was their language, and Jewish refugees arriving after the war, you know, were rushed into Yiddish, not Yiddish classes, Hebrew classes, and they really, you know, it was not well regarded for Yiddish to be spoken on the streets, or you know, there weren't plays being done in Yiddish anymore. But I guess that was the insecurity of a new nation trying to kind of establish its identity. I mean, all of that has shifted now, but still, you know, so there's not a kind of ban on speaking Yiddish. I mean, there's a couple of Yiddish theatres and there's Yiddish music in Israel now, but it's still very much a, you know, a minority thing.
Yeah, the investigation that you do goes from various parts of the world where many people went to after the Second World War, made their home in Melbourne, is a very large group of people. You go to other places as well. You go to Berlin, you go to Weimar in Germany, you go to Haifa in Israel, you go to New York. These are all places where there's this resurgence of wanting to understand Jewishness through a completely different lens, and that's the Yiddish lens, right?
That's right. And that's what fascinated me, that it was young people, you know, who did not grow up speaking Yiddish, you know, who were suddenly, or suddenly is probably not the word, you know, over two or three decades, but, you know, gravitating towards wanting to know more about Jewish culture. And the only way you could access Jewish culture, like Yiddish was the key to unlocking it. You had to learn the language and see what was contained in the language. So I was really investigating a movement of people who, well, you know, I don't consider myself young, but like me, I grew up like until I was 10, my grandmother lived with us and she was a Yiddish speaker. She spoke, you know, learned English pretty quickly too, but she would only speak to my mum and dad in Yiddish when they didn't want the kids to hear the conversations, you know. So it was that language. We weren't at all encouraged to learn it, you know. It was just like they had another kind of secret language. But you know, like many Jewish people who migrated to the so-called New World, you know, Australia and America and Canada, there's also big Jewish communities in Canada, they felt scared of speaking Yiddish on the streets, you know, scared of anti-Semitism, that it would provoke anti-Semitism, which is ironic when you think of where we are today. But, and you know, somehow ashamed of it too, feeling like that was the old world and we'll leave that behind and we'll assimilate. We'll, you know, they were very much wanting to assimilate you know, get into the swing and the benefits and get a sense of belonging in the new world.
There was something that was really interesting about the Yiddish diaspora, despite that very important element of shame and also social control that was emanating, I presume, from a Zionist perspective of creation of a new state and a new Jewishness, as it were, is that all that culture didn't dissipate, in fact, many of the icons of comedy that we're all used to in the West, all that sort of stuff, and the lingo, it's all just coming. It comes through the pores of the culture, isn't that
it? The does
case? It doesn't dissipate.
It doesn't dissipate. Barry Kosky says it very eloquently in the film. You know, he says the Germans think, you know, I mean, they feel tremendous guilt, I guess, as they should as a nation, you know, but he says they think it, you know, all that culture disappeared, it's gone, it's dead. But it's not. It just reinvented itself, you know, offshore in New York, in the Catskills, you know, in Montreal, but also in Latin America, Argentina, Brazil. You know, there's strong Jewish culture. Melbourne has had it, the Kadima, you know, which is the Jewish cultural centre and the home of Yiddish theatre. That's been going for 113 years, you know. So the actual Jewish Yiddish theatre has had its highs and then it disappears for 20 years and nothing happens, you know, and then it bubbles up again and whatever. But even regardless of whether the actual Yiddish theatre is in an on wave or an off wave, many, many cultural events were absolutely regular in Yiddish across those 113 years. They were called, you know, I think every Saturday night there was what was called spoken word concerts. And it was, you know, Yiddish speakers from, well, some local, but some, you know, whenever there was a kind of celebrity from Europe or someone in town, and they would just speak in Yiddish. They would tell speak poetry in Yiddish. You know, poetry just remained Yiddish poetry as a very, very strong thing. You know, in these circles, I guess the kind of foundation members of the Kadima were Bundists. You know, they were members of the Jewish Workers' Party, and they have kept their Yiddish roots incredibly strong. You know, they still are today. And there's, you know, I talk about a younger generation, which there is, but they wouldn't have got there without the seeds which have been sown by stalwarts like Arnold Zabel, you know, and Tommy Kalinske and Michael Gawenda, you know, that have always kept it alive. And now it's the, you know, that was something that has grown and that the next generation have enjoyed and seen the value of, and now, and you know, and now embarking investigations of their own.
We know you love listening to 3CR, but we also know that many of you haven't downloaded the Community Radio Plus app yet.
The app lets you tune in anywhere and share the station with your friends.
So show the love and share the love and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
You're with Annie on Showreel on 3CR. This is a conversation I had with filmmaker Roz Horan about her film Yiddish Land.
I was really fascinated by one of the plays, that pieces of theatre that you concentrate on, which is the one about the, they talk about the people investigating and owning their cultural roots, basically. We're talking about things like Yiddish holds ghosts, and that notion, there's a famous play that is related to a dead student, people who have died young, who have died too young, where do their voices go? And a student taking over the body of a woman, right? And I'm thinking, you know, like there's these Hollywood films that constantly use that motif effectively of of spirit shifting into others' bodies. It's fascinating, isn't
that's
it?
That's right. And the exorcism, you know, that's then required to relieve the person who's been invaded by a ghost. No, I mean, so many of those tropes, you know, come from Yiddish. And Yiddish has had such a profound, you know, the Yiddish theatre and the Yiddish literature and the Yiddish arts have had such a profound influence on the theatre of Broadway. You know, so many of the great Broadway actors, and, you know, they're Jewish and they have that Yiddish, you know, those things in their knowledge and in their...
It's the circus and too, you know, the sort of the movement from one thing to another, because of, I presume, all the various things that have happened have to be contained in the language. And you actually, that thing about, what is it, a shamil is the person that drops the soup and the other one is the one that gets it.
Yeah, the shlamazel's the one it falls on, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's one, a shmigig is the one who says afterwards, so what kind of soup was it?
I mean, yeah. The ability to be that complex in your insults, yeah, is pretty incredible.
It is incredible. I would definitely say there are the most imaginative and complex insults in Yiddish, you know, because I don't know, people were oppressed, you know, there's a great deal of poverty. It was mainly, you know, people have this illusion all Jews are rich or something. Well, you know, some have made good and are, but I mean, essentially in Europe, in this whole culture, people lived in what's called shtetls, which is very small, poor villages, you know, and there was a great deal of poverty and people were herded into ghettos, you know, not just in the Holocaust, but, you know, pogroms, you know, throughout history. And in those circumstances, you know, you had to have this black humor. And there was a lot of, what's the word? Well, kind of irritation at each other, you know, as when people are, so these insults would fly, you know. It was a kind of spirited way of being a survivor.
Yeah, yeah. And the interview with Barry Kosky, I mean, in the film, you're a very good filmmaker because I've seen a variety of your other documentaries and they've been completely different. But they're the same in the sense that they really ferret into the ideas of different people who are proponents of the concept that you're looking into, and you find really great people to talk to because they've actually got views on things. And it was really interesting to talk to Barry Kosky because, one, he's had an illustrious career, I'll have to say.
Yeah.
But also he is also a discoverer, and he talks about his two different grandmothers, fantastic variation in conceptualization of Jewishness.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. He said he had the two extremes. So he came, you know, on one side he had the Hungarian grandparents, and the Hungarians were completely assimilated into Hungarian society. And the Hungarians, out of all of those Eastern Europeans, did not speak Yiddish, not much Yiddish at all. And that's why there's a big difference between Melbourne and Sydney, because most of the Polish Jews emigrated or migrated to Melbourne, and they were the Yiddish speakers, and most of the Hungarian Jews came to Sydney, and they're not the Yiddish speakers. So he had, but through that grandmother, she was enormously cultured and sophisticated, and she introduced him to opera from, you know, age 10. He went to every musical event, every opera, you know, in Melbourne, every ballet, every theatre. So that was kind of formed him artistically.
Which was pretty amazing too, because, I mean, Australia, you know, there was a very class divide between cultural imbibing of this sort, right?
That's right, that's right. But on the other side, he had the Polish grandmother who was the good cook and who was into food and, as he says, was the warm bosom you would go into for a hug. And there was a great deal of tension between the two sides of the family because the Hungarians looked down on the Polish Yiddish speakers and thought they were peasants, you know, and uneducated, which they were, you know, relatively speaking. So, yeah, he had both sides of the story, which is fascinating.
But he actually says it, the grandmother agreed with the Nazis that Yiddish is a perversion of German.
That's right. That's right. That was quite shocking. and I love his response. You know, she said, yeah, she was really hated the show he did. She said, I didn't like it at all. It was terrible. And why was it terrible? Because you used that language, you know. What's wrong with that language? Yiddish, it's not a language, you know. It's a perversion of German. And that's when Barry says, he realised, he went, wow, this is complex. You know, very simple, but it says it all. And it is complex, you know. There's sort of, it's been complex for me doing a film about Yiddish, you know, in terms of like,
especially at the moment, I'd say.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, absolutely, Annie. You know, you couldn't think of, in one way, I started work on the film 4 years ago, and who knew that we would be in the midst of this horrific war in Gaza? And, There's a whole big section of the world that just doesn't want to know about anything Jewish. It doesn't matter whether it's nothing to do with the war or Israel. It's quite different.
Well, I must have say, I thought I was wondering if I would actually do this interview. But see, I realised who you were and I followed your films. And also I've educated myself because over this period I've actually realised that Yiddish and the Bundes are a completely different kettle of fish. And at all the rallies, there's all these people who are saying, listen, this is not my Jewishness.
It is. I mean, earlier on, like Bundism, like in the late 1890s, when there were big discussions about how are we going to survive as Jews, we need a nation state, which would lead to Zionism and whatever, all the Bundes who believed we had to stay in the diaspora and we had to make us, still have our Jewish identity, but be absolutely a part of every community that we're in. And I think Jews in the diaspora have always done that. That's why they've been so visible and made such a big impact in the diaspora community. But there used to be a lot of, full-on hostility between Bundists and Zionists in those early years. That has mellowed a lot, So there are a lot of Bundists today who do still believe in Israel, who believe that the state of Israel should exist. Like Michael Gawenda is one, he's written a book about it, I am one, I believe Israel should exist, but I'm horrified at how they've conducted the war and what's going on with the Palestinians and with how Netanyahu's regime, so there's all shades of political opinions. It's not sort of absolutely black and white, you're one or the other.
Tell me about the journey of the film. Tell me about the journey of the film, given that what's been, you started 4 years ago, but all this has happened.
Yes. Well, I don't know. I mean, so we didn't know if we would get into any film festivals, because it's just this sort of bans or not, blocking of Jewish work. But we did get into both of them. Well, we got into the Sydney, we premiered at the Sydney Film Festival. And I have to say, we were also offered a place at the Melbourne Film Festival. But in fact, we had to turn that down, sadly, because we'd had a distribution deal in Melbourne, which was with the Jewish Film Festival, who were going to give it 30 screenings, which they have, which has been great. It's still playing at the Classic Cinema in Melbourne and at the Randwick Ritz, but it was very sad to have to reject the Melbourne Festival. So that was sort of acceptance. We thought, oh, that's good, because my other films had got into those festivals. But I must say I'm finding it very hard internationally. We've had a lot of rejections. So far we've not had an acceptance internationally, and I think we would have at this stage. So that's pretty heartbreaking, really. But I hope we've still got a lot of submissions and irons in the fire. So there's still a lot of answers to come back yet. But my producer Jeff Daniels and I, we've just been very surprised. That we didn't get into that one where we thought it's absolutely the right sort of film for them. So, we've even had feedback from one of the major ones saying, look, my team and I watched this film and we really thought it was fantastic and very engaged, but we can't offer it a spot at this time,
All right.
So it's very tough.
Yeah, I'd imagine it would be.
Yeah.
But it is a fascinating film, and it does take you into a world that is, Yiddish just sounds like the most extraordinary investigation. I mean, there's Peter, you actually talked to a person who is of Irish Catholic background who's made her career around this, and it's quite an eye-opening element in the film, I'll have to say.
It is. Yeah, she's an absolute expert on Yiddish theatre, Yiddish. She's the foremost translator of, one of the greatest Yiddish playwrights, Shalom Ash, who she says is comparable to Chekhov. And he's was done all over the world, but she's done the English translations. And, she got into it through falling in love with Jewish writers when she was doing a literature course at university in New York, and then she thought, well, I want to read some of these writers in the original and so on. She doesn't feel any need to convert or become Jewish, she just thinks it's a fabulous language containing a really, really rich culture and history, and
Well,
all
you
the
know,
first
and
friends.
we really should mention Daniel Kahn.
Yeah.
But were people wrong for believing something simply because they were murdered? What
Yeah.
a quotable quote.
What a quote. Yeah, I know. He's amazing. Absolutely. And the other quote that really touches me that he says is when he says, "I always knew I was Jewish, but I didn't have Jewish. And now I'm starting to get Jewish." And, you know, and I relate to that.
That's it for Showreel for the year, in fact. We're going into our summer season. The next four programs are going to be my pick of some of the programs that I enjoyed bringing to you throughout 2024. So have a happy end of year holiday if that's what you are lucky enough to have. Otherwise, talk to you all next year.
Join the marching jobless corps. No work in the factories, no more manufacturing. All the tools are broken, rusted, every wheel and window busted. Through the city streets we go, idle as a CEO, idle as a CEO. Well, one, two, three, four, join the marching jobless corps. We don't have to pay no rent, sleeping in a camping tent, dumpster diving, don't take money. Every bite we share with 20, let the yuppies have their wine. Bread and water suit us fine, bread and water suit us fine. Well, one, two, three, four, join the marching jobless corps. Worked and paid our union dues. What did years of that produce? Houses, cars, and other shit. The richest benefit. What do workers get for pay? Hungry, broke, and thrown away. Hungry, broke, and thrown away.
What do you think of the world of Yiddish?
Shim lang hin fabrik dem hammer klang des liegen kalem kaum vergessen sind der jaber sei schon fressen gay in hier rum in gas wie dich wir den pust und pass wie dich wir den pust und pass eins zwei drei vier arbeitslose sind in hier joren lang der arbeit schwer und geschafft aus mehr und mehr hat der schlesser steppen länder
listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.